What does it take to get a more in-depth look into the week's top local news stories? The Debrief brings you inside for a one-on-one conversation with our reporters. They'll tell you what it takes to get the story behind the story. The who, the what, the when, the why. Every week, right here, right now. The Debrief.
Brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Visit our partner site, nbcnewyork.com/healthyou, to help you on your health journey. Hackensack Meridian Health, life years ahead.
Getting high in the tri-state, legally, recreationally. Hello, everyone. I'm David Ushery, the co-anchor of the 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. newscasts on News 4 New York. And this is our debut podcast called The Debrief, where we take a look at a meaty story that we've done over the past few days, and we take you behind the scenes, give you more access. And we're happy to begin with a series we dedicated a lot of time to, and that is The Real Cost of Pot. Sarah Wallace is our investigative reporter who covered it. Sarah, good to see you.
Nice to see you, David.
All right, so for those viewers who didn't see it, and I encourage you to go to NBCNewYork.com and search Sarah's name, Sarah Wallace, and all parts will come up. But for those who didn't see it, Sarah, just give us a quick overview of what you did.
Well, here's why we did it. Our executive producer, John Cuthbert, had this concept. Let's look at Colorado's experience with recreational pot 5 years after retail sales began. Because as we know, the tri-state is looming to have pot come. New Jersey looks like it might be finalized very quickly. New York is on a fast track. Connecticut, sometime down the road. We wanted to know how it affected people in Colorado. That's the canvas that we set out to paint, and we did in a five-part series. We looked at everything from how law enforcement is dealing with it. What about the economy? What about banking? What do employers and employees think? And what do school administrators and guidance counselors think about recreational pot?
And I think if you think you know everything about it, or you think you understand that, okay, they're going to make recreational pot legal, they'll work it out, you learn from the series that it is complicated.
I learned from the series that it is extremely complicated and extremely controversial still to this day. I mean, law enforcement is just apoplectic about it in Colorado. And employers say it's the best thing that ever happened to many businesses and employees. And it has created a booming economy. But there are downsides as well. And we wanted to look at the layers. We wanted to peel back the layers and see what's the real deal for people.
So let's peel back some of those layers. Let's take a deeper dive. Tell me about the I-team and the conception of the idea, how you chose Colorado, and then what it took. Because I looked at it in awe of five parts. I haven't done that much in my career, sir. I don't know if I have. Three, maybe, but five.
I had never been in Colorado. So I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't even know where things were from here to there. I didn't know what to expect in the pot landscape. Was it going to be like Amsterdam,
right,
when people are puffing in cafes, right, in cute little cafes on the corner or walking around smoking? That isn't happening there.
Wow. But yet I was struck, because it's hard to envision that here. For example, you go to what's called a private club. Explain that and talk about your impressions when you went in there.
Think of it kind of like a BYOB, only in this case, you're bringing your own bud.
That's right. BYOB, as in bring your own bud. Yeah. In this case, not your bud beer, but your bud flower. You can't smoke in public. And there are restrictions about where you can smoke. You can smoke in your own home. But let's say you rent or you're in government housing. You can't smoke there. This guy from Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, Marty Fuchs, came up with this idea of having a private club. It's on the outskirts of Denver. Mm-hmm. There are some very strong regulations about where you can and can't have them. I walked in first. My cameraman, Dave Hiller, came in slightly after. When I walked in the door, the smoke was so strong I couldn't see.
I mean, it looked like it from the video.
The haze was just overwhelming, and the smell was overwhelming. Dave Hiller walked in after me, and he looked at me and he said, "I'm going to leave my jacket in the car." And I said, "Yes, can you also take my jacket, take my bag, basically take everything," because I knew that I was just going to smell for days. And we did.
And it's interesting, because I think my children, even some of your kids who are a little older than mine, are coming up in a different era about it, right?
Well, they are. And that's a very controversial issue. It is fascinating. You go into these stores, usually they're chains now. The mom and pops haven't survived all of the regulations. But people walk in, they can buy up to an ounce a day. And one of my favorite lines was the woman who said, I like to layer my high. I like gummies. I like to smoke. I do a little every day. A lot of the people we spoke with didn't want to go on camera.
Wow.
They're school teachers. One of the guy was a plow operator. They don't want to have people know that they're smoking.
Gotcha.
And then again, we had lots of people who were sure. I believe in it. It's great. I come in here every day. I take a little and I smoke at night. But there's a big issue with the kid thing. And I think that's the concern of a lot of people at schools.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the products are marketed very attractively. And the gummies and the edibles are a big thing. Now, you're supposed to be 21 to buy.
Right.
But there is a huge market with these edibles and gummies because they don't smell.
But I thought the school administrator you interviewed made an interesting point. Like, we looked at it, we haven't seen an increase in student use as far as we can measure.
Right. Correct? One of the arguments about that is that a lot of these surveys are voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids are saying one thing, is that really
true? Say what you think, but you might want to hear.
But statistically, you're correct, and that's a good thing. But I think what is of concern, and which you can't really measure, is this question about availability.
We see an increase of students who perceive the marijuana use as not harmful because it's natural, because it's legal. Sometimes we ask them, you know, how did you have access? Well, mom and dad smoke it. Sometimes we smoke it together. Sometimes I get it from Big Brother.
If mom and dad are smoking, or they're leaving out chocolate bars or gummies and the child sees that, is that a potential problem?
Talk to me a little bit about law enforcement.
I reached out to the Aurora Police Department, got in touch with the guy who's the head of the marijuana team, and they have a designated marijuana team. We thought originally that we would just go and he would talk about the problem. When we got there, it just so happened that they were doing a search warrant the next day on an illegal grow house. They had a special ops TAC team meeting, which they invited us to come to, and then we went with them on the operation.
Aurora Police, search warrant!
One inside.
Get your hands up. All right, they're in contact with one, bringing him outside.
We always need a bit of luck and timing in our stories too, right?
Who has that happen?
Right.
And, you know, law enforcement often doesn't let you go on a ride-along.
Right.
They not only let us ride along, they let us mic the guys.
Oh, the access was, I thought, extraordinary.
It was extraordinary. And it was fascinating because here we're rolling through this beautiful suburban neighborhood. And I kept saying, there's an illegal grow house in this nice neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that's where they are.
Yeah. And the phenomena behind that, these are houses that are being rented, not lived in.
Right. So what they're seeing is they're seeing drug traffickers. They set up people who are renters who don't have criminal records. And they basically buy a bunch of pot plants at different locations. You can buy 12 at a time. Mm-hmm. And then they send them to the house and they grow them. Mm-hmm. And then when they get caught, oftentimes these people have no criminal records, so law enforcement complains that they get a slap on the wrist and there's no real message to the criminal enterprise. That's a real concern here because as long as you have pot illegal in states, they believe there's going to be a thriving black market. Proponents say, well, just make it legal nationally
everywhere.
And you're not going to have a problem.
Yeah. What about people that might be supportive of it or not as concerned about it? They'll say in conversation, look, we know the implications of driving while drunk, but you never really hear about people getting in accidents or doing things while high. You took a look at that too.
I think that's a huge concern. One of the issues that the officers bring up is that there is no baseline for testing. So really, there's no good data collection of what it was like before it was legalized. And it's difficult to really figure out what is happening. One big issue is that the science is behind all of this, and there is no reliable roadside test for THC, which is the psychoactive ingredient. And there is no national standardized test like there is for blood, alcohol. You know, it's 0.08 nationally.
Yeah, right. Let me ask you something else. The funding, a lot of people said, well, now that we make it legal, then we get this tax revenue, and that helps all for infrastructure and schools and education. And then you point out something that I was, frankly, surprised at.
Well, there's no question that it has added to the coffers. There's no question it's created direct jobs in the industry and tangential jobs. But it is less than 1% of the budget in Colorado. So everybody thinks, oh, we're going to fix the schools. Everybody thinks the roads are going to be fine. If you think, oh, it's going to be the cure-all to all our problems, that is not going to happen.
And you also pointed out in your reporting that health and safety is largely more or less self-regulated out there. I mean, they have these state entities set up, but for the quality control, you know, they have to do it themselves because of the federal law, which you point out.
Right. It is ironic, isn't it, that it's still illegal federally. So all of these people are technically, if you really want to look at it, breaking the law, but nothing's being done about it. But that brings up a great point. It's a cash economy in Colorado because most federal banks won't accept marijuana money. It is all cash. People who are employees have to largely use a credit union. One of my favorite parts was we were in one of the businesses as Med Pharma, and they grow and they cultivate. And what was fascinating to me is that they only want female plants. They joke that it's very sexist and they kill off all the males. Sorry, David, but be glad you're not a marijuana plant.
Yeah, right. That's interesting. They're just more healthier?
Well,
they don't want
the pollen. So if they cross-pollinate, the men have the pollen. Yes.
Yeah.
The seed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you cross-pollinate, that can have an impact on the purity of the strain.
I see. Okay. So final question, other than the gender preferences for the buds, anything else surprise you?
I just love the fact that I didn't know what to expect, and I saw both sides, and I still haven't drawn a conclusion about whether or not it should be legalized recreationally, because there are different aspects to this that we really need to consider. And I love the fact that it sparks discussion.
Sarah, just incredible work, you and your photographer, Dave Hiller, as well. We want to commend you and thank you for sharing this with us. And with that, we conclude our first News for New York Debrief podcast. But look for us here as we take a deeper dive into our story. See you next time.